May I have your attention, please?
Welcome to the Life in Tech podcast with Jay and Saad, where every week they will be sharing their experiences, insights, and opinions about working in the technology industry.
Simply the best.
Welcome back to the Life in Tech podcast with Jay and Saad. In this episode, we're going to discuss how to deal with conflict in a workplace from our experience.
I like that. From our experience.
Because
it's going to be, guys, this is going to be, well, my people, this is going to be an episode where we're going to kind of draw from our own kind of experiences and kind of have a discussion around times where conflict has arisen and kind of ways in which we can kind of resolve conflicts make themselves apparent. Ultimately, like, I think we need to understand exactly kind of what is conflict and kind of what we mean by conflict in the workplace. And I'm sure anyone who is kind of listening to this will understand some of these scenarios and kind of where they can come up and also where they can kind of escalate beyond control as well. And so like conflicts as a definition ultimately is when like two or more parties collide and have differences in opinion or direction. And in a company context, this could be due to having differing views on the business priorities, having differing views on the direction of a product or what features should have the highest priority, for example. And also clashing when it comes to your own individual priorities and believing that they outweigh or outvalue those priorities and objectives of your peers. So all of these scenarios can actually lead to conflict in a workplace, which if left unresolved can create a very hostile environment, which will have a ripple effect outwards and towards the rest of the team kind of as well. So in this discussion today, we want to kind of discuss the types of conflicts, types of kind of personalities in which kind of conflicts can be escalated or kind of de-escalated, and kind of through these kind of personality types, you might actually be able to kind of identify within yourself kind of ways in which you naturally kind of deal with conflict, but also ways in which you might want to kind of adapt in the future. And ultimately, when it comes down to kind of conflict, what we're not saying is that all conflict is bad. What we're saying is we want to be able to help people get to a place where they can manage the conflict in a way that turns it productive rather than it becoming destructive kind of within the team or the kind of business. So Saad, like what are your thoughts on conflict generally in the workplace, and can you draw from any kind of experiences dealing with conflict?
I think conflict in a workplace is a given, right? Like I don't think you can find, and I might be wrong on this, but I just thinking about my past experience and the places I've worked at, you know, it's very difficult, I think, to find an organization where there's not going to be any conflict, or you're not going to be in any conflict, right? With your peers, you can even be in conflict with yourself, conflict in ideas, or, you know, it depends how deep we want to take this discussion on conflict. But if let's assume that we're talking about conflict with others, your peers and maybe clients, or I think it's a difficult thing in general, because I think it's a natural trait that people avoid conflict or would rather avoid it.
Interesting.
Right? Even though they might know it's not the right thing to do. Because I think conflict has a bad reputation, right? So for example, you might have thoughts like, I didn't like the way that person at work spoke to me, or I don't agree with that idea, but I just want to be that nice person in the room. I want to be that agreeable person in the room. Now, I'm not saying if you're someone who addresses conflict, you're not a nice person. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is I would rather be that agreeable person in the room where, let's just make this day go a bit easier. Let's just agree with everything and keep the ball rolling. Now, I think that's quite natural, because addressing conflict is difficult. Why is it difficult? Because everybody's different. Like I might say to you, Jay, you know, I don't agree with that idea, bro, you know, but because you know me and like we deal with each other quite regularly, you won't really get annoyed by that. Like we have these discussions, we agree, sometimes we disagree sometimes. But I feel like sometimes you might work with people at work where you're pulled into a meeting where you don't usually work with that person. It might be someone from a different department or someone that you quite rarely engage with. And then you disagree with them or they disagree with you. That conflict starts to arise and you don't know how to deal with it because you don't really know that person. Now, I think the conversation at hand is not only how to deal with conflict, but also how to deal with conflict with people that you don't really know much about.
On a personal level.
On a personal level, yeah. Right? So I think it's a difficult thing. And I think the best way to approach any type of conflict is firstly to understand yourself, the way that you digest conflict. So are you someone that gets a bit bothered by criticism? Are you someone who gets bothered when someone disagrees with you? Are you quite stubborn? I'm not saying any of these, there's anything wrong with any of these traits. I'm just putting these out on the table, right? Are you someone who's my way or the highway type of, or are you an agreeable person? Are you someone who is adaptive and you don't mind people challenging you and disagreeing with you and actually pulling you up on conflict, you know? So we're all different. So I think the first step, or this is what I generally try to do, is understand myself first, because I shouldn't come to the expectation that, oh, they must know how I feel.
Yeah.
Why should you know how I feel? You don't know how I feel. Why should I put that expectation on somebody else, right? It's upon me to process how I feel and then present it in a manner that is firstly approachable and secondly, non-confrontational.
But do you, so saying that, do you believe that you need to kind of handle these things like publicly or privately? So for instance, if someone addresses you in a certain way or kind of disagrees with you or your approach in like a group setting in a meeting, do you address it there and then, or do you have a separate conversation kind of aside of the session?
It's a good question. It all depends. Now, if someone outright just disrespects you in a room full of other people, there can be two scenarios here, to the way I see it. Either they don't like you flat out, which is, if you're somewhat of a decent human being, you're not going to do that even to people you don't really like in a workplace. The second thing is that maybe they have, there's three things actually, not two. The second thing is that maybe they have something going on that is non-relational to the setting at hand. And the third thing is maybe they don't have the skills. Now, we spoke about this before, about personal development, professional development, and developing your skills in a workplace, not just related to your job description. Because quite rarely do I see on job descriptions for things in our field anyway, is how to deal with conflict, how to resolve disagreements within a team. I don't see these type of things on job descriptions, maybe because they're more suited to like the leadership roles and stuff like that. I don't know. I haven't looked into those too much. But it is the third scenario, and they don't have the skills, then those around them, their peers and their superiors and the people that they report back to, should really be helping them develop those skills before they drag them into any sort of meeting like that, right? Now, coming up, circling back to your question about, do you handle it publicly or privately? It all depends. If I feel like they do have something else going on, I know that my peer's having a hard time at home, or, you know, they're dealing with some more stress than they usually do, I'll leave it, because I'm generally a very patient person. So I will give them the benefit of the doubt, and then I'll probably address it with them privately. However, if it's a thing related to work specifically, like we're discussing a particular idea, or and I've been dragged into this meeting because people want my expertise and my ideas, they're seeking that from me, and then I've got someone in there just dealing with me in a very disrespectful way, or not hearing me, like, yeah, I hear you, but we're doing it this way anyway. Like, I think you can challenge those things publicly, but again, it comes back to, do you have the skills? Are you able to maintain your frame? Are you able to not come across as, you know, passive aggressive and belittling and stuff like that? I think it comes down to the individual, and that's very difficult. So that's why my first piece of advice is always forget understanding others first. You need to understand yourself, because when you understand yourself and you have that understanding that, okay, I know how I react when someone shouts at me. I know how I react when someone cries in front of me. I know how I react, because you can't deal with how other people deal with you. You cannot change or control how people deal with you, but you can always control your reaction. You can always control yourself, maintain yourself, contain your emotions if they're unhealthy ones and stuff like that. So it's always about understanding yourself first. And I think from there, that allows you to now make a correct judgment on whether I should deal with this right now publicly, or I should be patient and do it privately. However, I do sway towards the private more, because I believe that even if someone disagrees with you, it's confrontational and all of these things, you should always maintain people's honor as much as you can. I'm not about embarrassing people and making people look smaller than me or anything like that. I think you can respect people to a certain degree, even if you don't see eye to eye. So I do sway towards more of the private approach, but I'm not completely against the public. And I think as long as you understand yourself, then you can make a better judgment.
Interesting. I feel like a lot of it's to do with ego, and a lot of the reason why like people can't help but react to a confrontation by being openly kind of confrontational back, right? Kind of in these kind of scenarios is because kind of ego gets hurt. So if you are pitching a particular idea, a strategy, whatever it might be, and somebody has a counter argument kind of for that or for your opinion or dismisses your opinion for kind of XYZ reason, your ego can feel crushed. And if you don't have the self-awareness that your next step or reaction is based around your ego, then you could literally impulsively just react and cause an eruption when it comes to the conflict, right? Rather than having a controlled conflict. So like what I mean by controlled conflict is taking in what the other person has said and then internalizing that and thinking before you speak or kind of vocalize and your kind of reaction or the emotion that you're feeling. When it comes to kind of conflict in general, you mentioned something that was very kind of interesting to me, which is around you need to kind of get to know yourself first before getting to know others. And when I went on kind of leadership training, like kind of quite a few years back, we all had to kind of undergo like personality tests, like Myers-Briggs tests, and there's kind of a few other tests.
It'll be interesting to know. I have a feeling anyway where you fall, like just from knowing you. But it would be very interesting to see like actual results of each other. Actually,
because
the thing is, sorry to cut you there, it's just before I lose the thought, is these personality tests, a lot of people are not, you know, they're not convinced by them. I'm very convinced by them because
so am I.
Every time I've done one, it's like, hold on a minute, yeah, this he knows me.
Consistent.
Yeah, like it's really consistent. So it'll be really interesting to see yours, just as a side note. But
we could definitely discuss that as well. But like when it comes to kind of conflict and these kind of personality tests, when it comes to conflict, so there's a specific test, I can't remember it, but when I do, I'll add it to the show notes and stuff. But it's a specific test that basically identifies what your attitude is to conflict or kind of conflicting scenarios within the workplace specifically. Kind of, I've listed some down, all of them down actually. So kind of one is like you're very competitive, right? So competitive basically means that you value kind of your goals over relationships. So whatever your objective is, whatever it is that you want to achieve, it doesn't matter what relationship you have in front of you, whether it's a good one, bad one, whatever. As long as you achieve your goal, then you don't really kind of care about the effects.
Does that include, when you say don't care about the effects, is that the feelings of the other person or the others?
Yeah.
Like you're just going all in, no matter who you offend, as long as you achieve your goal. That's interesting. Exactly. Okay.
You argue your point and stand firm on your kind of original kind of goals or kind of objective. So it doesn't matter what's coming back at you, what relationship you have with the person. It's basically what you said earlier, your way or the highway.
To a certain degree though, that's helpful. Because if you don't have individuals like that, then you'll never get anything done.
That's not true.
But when I say like that though, I don't mean fully fledged like my way or the highway. I'm not listening to anyone else. But like you need, does this include assertiveness?
Yeah, I'm going to go through them.
I mean, does this point one include assertiveness? Because I think what I'm thinking about is more of an assertive person, not.
But there's ways of being, there's different ways. Even assertiveness can go fall into different buckets.
Okay, let's hit it. Because maybe I'm thinking more of that person.
But this is a highly assertive person. So someone who comes under the competitive category is highly assertive.
But they don't care about offending others.
No.
Okay, that's...
The next category is compromise. So you're a compromising person. So you're willing to give up some of your goals in order to preserve the relationship that you have with the people in the room.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you expect the other person or your colleagues to kind of give up something as well, under the understanding that if you both sacrifice, then you've demonstrated the willingness to kind of get
along. That's probably the most helpful one for marriage.
The next one is collaboration. So kind of collaboration is that kind of you value your goals and the relationship, and you try and find some sort of kind of creative ways to kind of achieve everyone's goals, but in the process build on the relationship that you already have.
Interesting.
So that means that you can even kind of enter difficult conversations, but you're aiming to kind of gain a win for everybody, not just yourself. Another one is accommodation. So you'd rather give up your goals than risk the relationship. So you value the relationship over your own goals. So then there's avoidance as well. So avoidance is the last one, where you kind of walk away from your goal completely and the relationship, because you're just like, it's not worth the trouble and you just don't want to deal with the situation. So you don't want to have to deal with a situation of you pushing for your goals,
right?
So you just kind of dismiss them and say, okay, like whatever you want to do, we'll do it. But at the same time, like you kind of dismiss yourself from the relationship because you were unable to obtain your goals and you're actively now pursuing someone else's goals, the relationship that you have with that person also diminishes because you distance yourself from that person because you have negative emotions emotion towards that person now. So like these are the kind of general kind of categories that people tend to kind of fall in. My question is, what one do you think that you fall into? Is it competitive, compromising, collaboration, accommodating, or avoidance?
Well, I like to eliminate, to identify the one that I think I fall into, I like to first eliminate the ones that I know I don't fall into.
Sure.
Because I have some doubt on which one it is. I might fall on the borderline of maybe two. For example, I know I'm not avoidant. That's number one. Now, this reminds me of a book that I read before about human beings generally have three attachment styles. I think we discussed this before. It's the secure, the anxious, and the avoidant. These three can be pretty much applied to any relationship that you have. Right, we're going to get back to which one I think I fall into. I just want to make this point because you mentioned the avoidance. It's a good point. So if you're an anxious person, generally, you overthink, right? You're always like, oh, I said that to this person the other day. I wonder what they think of me now. Like if you think like that generally, then you fall into the more of the anxious attachment style towards people. Like you prefer not to have those thoughts in your relationships. You prefer to be like, everything's nice and nothing is bad happening and there's no conflict. But as an anxious person, generally, you can't help but have those thoughts. The avoidant is exactly what you explained. It's just they avoid everything, any conflict they can avoid, they just avoid it. Even if they're bothered by it, they're hurt, they will never raise an issue with you. They just stay quiet. Then you've got the secure. The secure is the person that can bounce around between conflict and non-conflict, and you know, they can really just handle their situation. Now, what's interesting about this is that the secure is not secure with others, they're secure with themselves. And it comes back to the point I was making in the beginning about understanding yourself. Because they're so secure within themselves emotionally, they're not bothered by the people around them. Because when it gets to that person, they'll deal with it in the best way they know how, because they feel secure. Now, what's problematic is when you have the anxious and the avoidant together, because one pushes and one pulls. So you never have a resolve. So if Jay pushes, meaning avoidant, and Saad pulls, meaning anxious, we're never going to come to a conclusion. We're only going to be on a seesaw, up and down, up and down. Saad's pulling, Jay, we need to do it like this. Jay saying, no, we don't. I've got other things to do. Avoid them. Get off me, right? So why this is interesting is because this is why I think when it comes back to teams and identifying leadership and identifying particular roles and stuff like that, you need secure people. It's okay to have anxious and avoidant. It's fine. It's okay to be those traits. But you need also a delegator, which is the secure. So because a secure can handle an anxious, can handle an avoidant. That's just a side note. Coming back to this, I'm definitely not avoidant. So I'm eliminating that one completely. Because although I'm patient, will be a time where I'll raise, eventually I will raise an issue or a conflict and stuff like that. So I'm not avoidant, right? I think I fall, collaboration is somewhere I can really see myself. I'm definitely not my way or the highway, okay? But I am assertive because I believe assertiveness just gets you to a conclusion, whereas beating around the bush and it's just problematic for everyone. You know, no one wants to deal with that. So I think I am assertive, but I'm more collaborative. I can be accommodating. I do like to compromise and I like to hear other people before I present my ideas and my thoughts. Because more time, I've experienced that a lot of misunderstanding, a lot of miscommunication can happen from not listening to others first. Because the first one I think is very problematic, because if you're like, my way or the highway, everyone keep your mouth closed, we're doing it like this and that's it. But how do you know that they're not going to agree with you anyway? So you could have avoided all of that, my way or the highway, keep, you know, all that. drama stuff and just listen first and then realize, hold on a minute, actually they agree with me. This meeting's going to go really smooth then. So I think listening first, okay, and that, for me, that's accommodating, you know? So Jay, what do you think? So-and-so, what do you think? Do you think we should do it like this? Do you think, and then speak. Allow others to present themselves first. It might just cap 50% of your headspace, right? So I think I fall between the collaborative, accommodating, and I am assertive when I need to be, but I'm also someone who likes to pick my battles wisely. I try my best.
Which is your strongest though?
I don't always, my strongest.
I feel like you're like giving an on the fence answer.
What do you think working with me?
I haven't worked on a project directly, so it's hard for me to say. But working with you kind of on the podcast, I'll definitely say you're collaborative and accommodating, I would say.
Yeah. So I that's what I'm saying. I find it difficult to really sit. Okay, if I had to, I would probably fall on the collaborative one. If I had to. Because The fact of the matter is, two brains are stronger than one. I don't care how clever you are. I don't care how intelligent you are.
Mm.
Two brains are stronger than one, okay? If you're not collaborative, you're just doing yourself a bit of a disservice because you're excluding other people's brains. And there could be some intelligence there that you don't have, right? And that's okay. Like, our brains, they operate differently. The way we operate is differently. Mm. So I think not being collaborative is doing a disservice to yourself. Mm. Working in isolation is a good trait, by the way.
Mm.
I do believe that. And I think it's a skill that if I was a hiring manager, I would look for that.
Mm.
But it doesn't mean that I'm looking for you to work in isolation all the time.
Mm.
Only when it's needed,
yeah.
Right? So if I had to, collaboration.
Mm.
But again, if it was the correct setting and I had to be assertive, I would do that.
But see, I think...
Assertive can fall into collaboration.
That's what I'm saying. I think that's the wrong way to put it, because I feel like a lot of people believe that assertiveness means that you're basically treading on people and saying, this is my idea, this is what I want to do, this is the direction we're heading down, and that's that. But assertiveness can actually be getting everyone together and forcing everyone to sit down and just have a difficult conversation to kind of get things kind of pushed forward, and kind of being the person that is that kind of intermediary to kind of various different parties and kind of ensure that we kind of push in the right direction, and being assertive in terms of we need everyone's collaboration in place. So I'm going to be the person to lead on that and bring everyone together to do so. So I feel like when it comes to assertiveness, I think that there is like a common, I guess, kind of misconception that assertiveness means like the loudest person in the room or the person with the strongest opinion. From kind of my perspective, like, so out of all of those, like, I fall strongly under the collaborative. I think that collaboration is like majority of like where I fall under. I've mentioned it in other podcasts, but like, I want to achieve my goals, but I want to understand the goals that everyone else is trying to achieve as well. And I don't mind being the person that's in the middle, you know, kind of doing all of these negotiations or kind of creating these conversations or the environments to have the conversations, whether they're going to be difficult ones or not, if that means that we're all going to achieve our goals.
That's interesting you say that, because one of the things that I really enjoy about working with you is that you're very easygoing, but you're not shy to say, no, actually, I don't agree with that. Because you and I are quite alike when it comes to how we deal with things, but we don't always agree. Like, we do have our own ideas.
Yeah.
But I think you're definitely right about you being in that area, because that's what I would describe you as if someone was to say, hey, what's it like working with Jay? You know, and although I haven't worked with a project, this is a project. But if we're talking about at work specifically, with other members, no, we haven't. But from what we've done here and, you know, the discussions we've had in private, I can see that you're very easygoing and you're an easy person to work with. And that's a very, very strong trait, actually, I think.
I'm quite chilled. But at the same time, like, that can work against
you.
Especially in the workplace, right?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people think that you're being, kindness is a weakness.
Yeah.
You might be passive. You might not have a strong opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
X, Y, Z, right? But if you're of a reflective nature, for one, you can consume the information. If you're collaborative, you're trying to understand everyone's points, and then you formulate an opinion or a view or a direction that you believe is the strongest or best direction to kind of head down. And then you communicate that. But in the workplace, from kind of my experience, a lot of people believe that if you're not like a tennis game, if you're not back and forth over the net, then you don't have the strongest opinions in the room.
Yeah,
but in
actual
fact, all of that batting back and forth over the net comes back to ego and people feeling as though they have to get their point across and not really listening to what the other parties are saying.
You know what's amazing about that is that I watch a lot of videos on leadership and leaders and stuff like that. And, you know, like Gary Vee and who are always at the forefront of their content, but really identify that the people around them is who are driving most of the... And I think that is a wonderful thing that these type of leaders, they mention when they say, guys, the brains is not me. You know, the brains are the people around that. And it really identifies those individuals around them. And I think it takes a lot of courage, actually, for someone who is in a leadership role or position that can outwardly say those things, because that just goes to show that they are, either they don't have a problem with their ego or they're really suppressing it in a healthy way. So it's a very good point about ego.
I think you need to kind of put your ego to the side. But one thing about all of those kind of personality traits that kind of we describe is that as a leader, like, you need to know when to switch. So for instance, I know for a fact that I fall under the collaborative kind of part of it, because my goals are important to me and I'm not necessarily willing to compromise on my goals. But at the same time, I want everyone to win. So I will find a way to achieve my goals whilst also helping others to achieve this and bring them on board, because for me, like, building on relationships is extremely important, and kind of having close bonds and kind of tight bonds with my colleagues is important because I feel like that elevates me and my team, and it also allows me to gain further support in the future if I have something that's really important to me that needs to get driven. And I feel like I've proven that kind of time and time again. But you know, I think that the way to kind of master that is to kind of do it in a way where it's not kind of obvious that you are trying to kind of achieve your own agenda, right? Not in a kind of deceptive kind of way, but in the sense that we're one team kind of trying to kind of achieve something together. At the same time, there's certain scenarios that come up, especially in leadership, where you might have to switch to the competitive nature, right? There are times where, like for instance, like there's a few things that have happened recently where I've literally had to be like bringing the team together and say that we have to execute on this by this time. Otherwise, we're not going to meet XYZ objective. And that is a bit of a kind of my way or highway situation, but it doesn't happen all the time. It happens right. in certain scenarios where like this is very high critical work, high risk, like critical work. Yeah. I mean, to get it over the line and done. I would say like 90% of the year is more of that kind of collaborative kind of side of things. But you have to know when to kind of switch between kind of various different modes.
Very interesting. Do you feel like though the switching can make some people feel a bit inauthentic, like having that mindset of, okay, now I'm walking into this high profile meeting and I'm going to just be more assertive?
That's different. So that's different to what I was just describing. So what I was describing is in the sense of certain business parameters have changed, and that means that our priorities have also changed with them, which means that we need to now drop certain things and we need to execute like quickly on something. So therefore I need to kind of switch my mode to from kind of collaborative or kind of one of the other traits to kind of very kind of competitive and okay, we need to get this over the line now. When you're going into different meetings and you're deciding, okay, now today I'm going to be really assertive, I think you're right. I think that is very kind of disingenuous and you can kind of see through that. And I feel as though...
It's funny though, because you can really identify those
You can
people.
See it, right? You can see it. Yeah. And to be honest, like what I don't like about those situations is that it veers the session off course.
Yeah.
And what you end up seeing is when people deliberately being contrarian to the room.
And they're not usually like that outside.
Especially if they're not usually like that as well.
Yeah.
It literally distracts the entire meeting and you spend a significant portion of that meeting discussing something which isn't constructive to the agenda. And that can be very frustrating because you can see that people are trying to kind of create some sort of status for themselves or position themselves in a particular way for like whatever reason, whether that's they're seeking a promotion, they want something, whatever. But I think it's detrimental to the final outcomes or deliverables of that session, right? And like you said, you can nearly always kind of see through that. And like for me, it's important to kind of stay as authentic as possible, no matter what criticism might come my way, because it comes down to intent. And I think that if your intent is in the right place and you're doing things for the right reasons, then I think it will lead to the outcomes that are right for the team. Whereas for me, I'll only be kind of contrarian or argumentative if I strongly believe that that is the way that we need to do things. But at the same time, because I am collaborative, as I mentioned, like I tend to take on board the views and opinions of everyone, internalize that, and then formulate an opinion as to kind of what I think is best for my team and our role and the role that we play within
It's amazing what can happen when you speak less and you listen more. It is,
but it's often seen as a negative.
Yeah, but I do not see it as a negative.
Neither
do I. You know, they say the wisest in the room is the one that's the most quiet, right? Like I know these, like that's just a saying, okay? It doesn't apply to every, you know, situation. But
certain people are punching the air right now.
I do really believe that listening more can just really solve a lot of problems, because again, you just don't know what others are thinking, and you don't know, again, you say they come back to intent, a lot of it comes back to your intention. And you know, if you don't listen to others, if you don't, okay, so we had this issue the other day, what's really going on? Let me know, is there something going on outside? Or you know, if you don't listen to others, you're constructing the way you're going to react to nothing. It's just your assumption. But if I say, okay, Jay looks a bit bothered today, you know, I'm going to just give him the platform, let him speak, because he might say something I don't know. You know, then I guess then now I know, okay, Jay's bothered by X, Y, and Z. Now I construct my reaction to X, Y, and Z, not A, B, C, my assumption, right? So I think communication skills, it's just coming back to the basics of communication skills. And it's just, you know, listening, and not just listening, you know, it's listening attentively.
Exactly.
You know, there's a lot of times where you can listen to others, but you're not really hearing what they're saying.
People just waiting for their turn to speak.
That's all it is.
That's what's happening.
Yeah, it's just like, in their mind, it's like, can you just hurry up and finish what you're saying so I can, spotlight can be on me? That's a problem. Like, if someone thinks like that, that's a problem. You might need to do some sort of vanity personality test or something like that, because that's a problem. But if the listening needs to be paired with attentive listening, like really listening to that person and looking at their body language and processing what they're doing, their facial expression. That's why I think a lot of people can't make eye contact. They find it so difficult to make eye contact. And it's quite, for me, it's quite sad to see sometimes, because you can really see the person struggling. Like, they're really fighting with their internal being, and they, you know, they're trying to make eye contact and they don't know what to do and they don't know where to look, and they're going like this. And here's a little tip. Just look at their nose. Like, right now I'm looking at Jay's nose, but he probably thinks he's looking at me, you know? So it's difficult, and I understand that. But I think, again, it's coming back to self-development and looking at yourself and working on yourself. If you find that you want to be more assertive and you're not, because a lot of people will say, I can't be assertive. It's not part of my personality trait. I can't mold my personality trait to the way I want it to be. That's not true. That's not true. Firstly, assertiveness is a skill, right? And a skill can be developed. So I always advise, even if you feel like you don't need it, going to therapy is so beneficial, you know, really is. Even if you're not going through any sort of mental challenges or anything like that, but just merely speaking to someone you don't know that knows how to deconstruct your thought process is so powerful. And this is why you see most of these high performant people in the world, what do they all have in common? They go to therapy, or they have some sort of advisor around them that can deconstruct their thoughts and their ideas. Because sometimes we always think, I have it right, you know, I'm the head of this and I'm the director of the, I have it right. And you don't. That's not true. That's not true. And, you know, as an engineer, actually, I always try to remind myself, no matter how much progress I make, or no matter how many titles I acquire, my mindset always stays the same. And what is that mindset of a junior engineer? And why is that? Because a junior is hungry to learn and will always remain hungry. Once you say to yourself, I've made it, you've put yourself in a very difficult mindset, because now you're not adaptive to growth. You are settled in what you believe, quote unquote, is I've made it. So no matter how many titles you give me, how many awards, how many Nobel Prizes, you know, if I ever receive one, but I always have that mindset of I'm a junior, right? And I speak to the juniors in my team just as like I speak to the seniors in my team, everyone, even though I know deep down inside, okay, there's seniors here that are more experienced. But I think if you have that mindset, then forever you'll be hungry, and forever you'll understand that learning is a lifelong thing. So we diverted a bit, but that's fine. So coming back to communication, is that that's difficult. It's a difficult skill. Not everyone says, I know how to communicate, but do you? Firstly, what are the main areas of communication? A lot of people might not know that. So communication is a massive area in understanding yourself. And then coming back to these personality traits is, I believe communication falls into all of them, because that is the essence of how to work with others and how to, you know, deal with conflict or resolve conflict or whatever have you.
No, definitely, definitely. And ultimately, you know, this discussion has been kind of around, I think, kind of understanding yourself and identifying the part that you play when it comes to conflict. And there's kind of one other kind of component that we need to kind of address is, how do we handle situations where we have the conflict with somebody in the workplace? Yeah. So we've hopefully now, anyone that's listening and can, even ourselves as we're talking this through, now that we've gone through the personality traits, if you're going through a conflict at the moment, or if you're going to go through a conflict in the future, you might be able to identify where that person that you're having a conflict with kind of falls kind of within those kind of personality kind of categories. And that might give you better understanding going forwards as to kind of how to kind of deal with that situation. But kind of in general, kind of when it comes to kind of handling conflict, I kind of strongly advise, well, firstly, that most people don't want to kind of have any conflicts or confrontation. But I advise having those discussions. It doesn't necessarily have to be public. It doesn't have to be when the kind of disagreement arises, but definitely take the time to kind of put something in a diary, like a coffee or a side of desk kind of chat. Like, hey, like, do you have 5 minutes? I just want to discuss something with you, and address the situation with that person on a one-to-one. The reason why I think one-to-one discussions are so much more kind of impactful is because it goes back to ego again. If you address something publicly or in the room with a group of people tend to become very kind of defensive immediately, and that then becomes counterproductive to what you're trying to achieve. when you're one-to-one with someone and it's just you two or you three and you're having a discussion in a kind of, call it a safe place, they're more open to listening to kind of what you're saying. And if you're coming at it from an angle where you've kind of identified something which you kind of didn't agree with or it made you feel a certain way, then the way that you articulate that feeling or kind of you express that feeling will land a lot better kind of when it's just kind of a one-to-one kind of discussion. So definitely first step is to organize or kind of arrange a session kind of with you by yourself, kind of with this person that's kind of causing the conflict. Additionally, go into that session with a view of how you believe it could be rectified. So for instance, don't just address that, okay, you spoke to me a certain way, I don't like it, or you disagreed with me on this, but I think you're wrong. Like, think about, it's down to you to kind of internalize and think about, okay, well, how might we move forward from this? And I'm now proposing to that person, in order to move forwards, this is what I think the approach should be. And hear, and then hear them kind of respond to that and understand kind of where they're coming from. And you might find that they agree with you, or they might have another idea that kind of builds upon what you have just suggested. And you start to kind of move forwards that way. Now, there are situations where conflict isn't resolved this way. It's quite rare, but it does happen. And you know, I've been brought into conversations where I've had team members kind of conflicting and they've tried all of this stuff, sitting down together, and it's just not working. So they've brought me into the conversation to try and kind of get things kind of resolved. And as a leader, it's kind of your job to kind of be impartial, understand where each kind of side is kind of coming
listening
from.
Listening to both of them first.
Listen to both acting. First.
Yeah.
But also, like, you as leaders provide additional context that these individuals
are
unaware of, right? Yeah, yeah. Like, you have additional business context, priority context, strategic context. So you can apply this to the conversation to help both parties understand the best direction of travel to kind of go down. But additionally, like, this is something which I find very useful, is there's that saying that says, you know, kind of there's kind of side A, side B, and then there's the truth in there, kind of in the middle, right? I like to gather like 360 perspectives. So a lot of the time, like, these are kind of issues that might happen in particular like product teams. So I like to get a view of what's the perception of this individual from the product team. What is it like kind of working with this person? What is the team dynamic? What challenges or successes have you had over the last kind of quarter, for instance? So that way I get a view of the behaviors that are being presented to me and whether or not what I'm being told about a particular individual is consistent or if it isn't, or if it's a kind of a one-off thing. And also I get a different view of the context of the kind of argument or the disagreement that's happening, because a lot of the time the disagreement is known by the product teams as well. So I wouldn't necessarily kind of go into it and say, okay, A and B are having a disagreement, like, tell me about it. I'd kind of go into that kind of discussion with our product team members just to get a general understanding of how the team is performing together, how they're collaborating together, how they get on, and allow them to kind of give me the information about the people in the team. And if it comes up, then I can kind of dig a little bit deeper and say, okay, well, what was your view of that? Like, who do you think was right and wrong in that situation? Because then that gives me kind of a rounded view so that I can best advise the individuals kind of going forward, because it goes back to that kind of competitive, compromising nature, right? You could be, if you just deal with the two individuals and you just kind of ask for their opinions,
they're just going to compete with each other.
They're just going to compete, but one of them might have a much stronger view than the other, right? And they might be much stronger at articulating themselves and asserting
You're not being just if you, let's say you agree with the person who has that stronger opinion. Now, if you choose that person just because you align with them, you're not being just now.
Exactly.
And one of the biggest traits of being a leader is that you're just in situations, right? You know why dealing with conflict, though, why I believe is so important, no matter how you deal with it, like whether you fall into one of those categories of personality traits or you deal with it in a way which you see the best, is dealing with conflict is so important in every area of life, I believe, because it eliminates the space of resentment. And resentment is very difficult to digest and to live with, because sometimes you might start resenting a particular individual that you don't want to resent, and you get along with them fine and stuff like that, but just because of that one moment, that one meeting, that one project, that one something, resentment has started to bubble, you know. And that's why I believe that dealing with conflict is imperative, but it's also imperative to be wise in the situation that you pick and the time that you pick, and also the mood that you pick. Don't approach that person when they're having a bad day. You don't approach that person when you're having a bad day. Because what happens when we're all having a bad day? We're not thinking straight.
Yeah.
Right. So I think being wise in picking your battles and picking your, I wouldn't say battles, but your conflicts or your conversations, these difficult conversations, is imperative, because it will just, you know, cancel out resentment. And that's very, very beneficial for the workplace, because how productive can you be when you're just resenting one another? It's not, you know, it's not productive at all. But Jay, this has been quite of a, not quite, it has been very enjoyable episode for me specifically, because I like this area a lot.
Yeah.
You know this, you know, when it comes to psychology. So I really like this area, and it's been very enjoyable. But I believe that we need to carry on this conversation. We need to take this to a part two, I think, because this is naturally going to lead on to dealing with toxic people and toxic situations. And this is something which I believe is everywhere. Actually,
yeah, you know, can't avoid that.
Can't avoid that. So I think we need to naturally fall into a part two, and we will do. It's just we need to wrap this one up because of time. And is there any 1 or 2 minutes, just last piece of advice, last piece of anything you want to add before we wrap up?
I would just say that last piece of advice from kind of my side is, as leaders, it's important to be impartial and like think about the kind of objectives and goals of the team when it comes to conflict, and kind of make sure that you kind of get a rounded view of the situation before deciding what direction to kind of head down and proceed in. And as kind of individuals who kind of find yourselves in conflict, and kind of this also applies to kind of leaders, try and take the time to kind of understand yourself first, and kind of what your attitude to kind of conflict is, and what your kind of reaction, natural reaction or disposition to kind of conflict is. And also try and use the same kind of tools or personality traits to identify where the person that you've got conflict with falls as well, so you can better understand them.
That's good advice, man. Very good advice. And we'll wrap up there. This has been the Life in Tech podcast with Jay and Saad. Follow us on the various platforms. So we've got a LinkedIn page. We'll be posting there quite regularly. And follow us on the various podcasting platforms to stay up to date with the latest episodes. So we've got Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts.
We're on everywhere. And let's keep the conversation going. If you have any comments about this episode or any previous episodes, kind of feel free to kind of create a post on LinkedIn, at us in there, kind of Jay Tuller, Saad Kabisi, and we can kind of keep this conversation flowing, man.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone. And we hope you deal with your conflicts in a constructive way.
Yes. Take care.